somebody help, not just anybody help, you know I need someone help. Well, when I was young, was so much younger than today. Hello and welcome to Real Recovery. So glad you're with us tonight. Bill Arnold on the side of the studio and across the way, George P. Fraser. Hello, George.
Bill, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Say, George, I got a verse I want to start tonight off with. Comes out of Isaiah chapter 5. It says in verse 21, woe to those who are wise in their own eyes and clever in their own sight. Gets people into a lot of trouble, doesn't it?
Wow, that's an indicting, isn't it?
No kidding.
So we start thinking we got it and we don't.
Exactly. But we think we do. We're wise in our own eyes, clever in our own sight, but it catches up with us eventually. We find out that we're wrong.
Yeah, it gets me in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, you think you got it going and you're the guy and what God has done for you, for me, I forget that I didn't do it myself and boom.
And let me just back up to the verse before it. It says, woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter.
Kind of get it mixed up, and I think that starts when we put ourselves in God's place.
Yes.
And then the rest of it kind of just goes with it.
They do mix it up. Why do they call it cold, hard cash when it should be warm, loving cash? That's just a mix-up.
How long do I have till I answer this? It's going to be...
Yeah. You can have as long as you like.
I'm going to need some time.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. So, George, we're going to talk about step three tonight. Then we've got Kelly in studio with us tonight, and he's got an incredible story we're going to have on the program tonight. So we're looking forward to it.
Always look forward yep. to it. And we're going to talk about step three as we made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understand him. And, of course, Bill, I think with all the guys we work with and in our recoveries, that's the hard step. We want to be God. We don't say that, but, you know, the first commandment is you shall have no other gods before me. And every time I sin, I'm choosing to do something I think is better than God's plan for me. And what we see with a lot of people who come into recovery, they're going to see if there is a God. God has to show himself to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm doing such a good job of running this deal, I don't know if I have room for God. And in the step, it talks about God as we understood him or understand him, depending on the step. And really, that came from the Oxford movement. And what they were talking about is how far you are along in your relationship with Jesus Christ. Where that's gotten watered down is you can have any God you want. Well, that's kind of why we're here in the first place in our recovery program, is because we were our own God. And a lot of people will tell you, they're egomaniacs with inferiority complexes. And the reason for that is they're trying to be God in their life, and they know they don't have the game to do it. And when they run into a wall, then they'll go running to God. But what we miss is God has this incredible plan for us, much better than our own. He created us, and we have no idea how much we're loved. So this is a key step.
Say more about step three.
Sorry to catch my wind. You know, I got half a left lung now,
that's
and I
true.
Get kind of with it.
You're down.
I still have
lung.
Half a brain, but that has never been a problem. I think a lot of it is we think we have a problem with, like, drinking or, you know, gambling.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like when we worked at the Salvation Army, one of the intake questions, my favorite, do you think you're a good person?
Mm.
Everybody thinks they are. You know, when I drink, I might have a problem. We are not great people. I'm watching this Vietnam series, which is just excellent. And one of the things that keeps coming across is how savage we are. Guys will say that they found that out, Americans in the war, that it was exhilarating at times. And the savage, you know, war is awful.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to learn how to do that. And we are broken. We like to say, hey, I'm okay, except for this. We're not okay at all.
Mm.
And the thought that you're not okay comes from God. It's an outside agency, the Holy Spirit, that has to convict us. You fall far short. And in your Isaiah verse there, we trick ourselves. We say that, you know, the bad is good. And look at it now. Everything's okay, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in our society, everything's okay. There is a right or wrong, and there is good and evil, and there is God and Satan. And when you start getting into recovery, and you hear God's voice dragging you into it, nudging you into it, you realize, hey, I've been wrong about this, but I've been wrong about everything. God does not have to prove himself to George Fraser. God does not exist because I believe in him. God is God, and thankfully for that, when we come running, we had a guest on here a few years ago, Johnny Turnipseed, a gang member and a head gang member in Minneapolis, and he said, God, please make this stop. And it did. Mm. This step is really God's calling us to not give him just our problem, give him our whole lives.
So, George, I find when you talk about we want to run our own show, we want to be in charge, but what if you have to grow up really fast because circumstances in life are such that you become the adult at age 12 or 13, and all of a sudden you have this idea that if I don't take care of myself, no one is going to. So you start to say, I am in charge. And I think our guest might speak to that tonight as well.
Okay, first of all, you're asking me about being an adult. I don't know if I can answer that with a, you know, sincerely. I think what happens is a lot of the people who came before us and generational sin can force people to grow up quickly. And a lot of times it's what somebody else did, and we're surviving, and we're becoming the head of the family. But for a lot of the rest of us, if you stick a needle in your arm, you're not a kid anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not God's plan. And that's really what we see, is this is not God's plan. People have gone their own way, and maybe a kid gets caught in the collateral damage, as we would say. I've been watching too many war shows at night.
I can see that.
But God is the solution. And we'll probably hear a story tonight, something along those lines. And we hear that every week here. We go our own way to try to solve what other people have done to us and what we've done to ourselves. People react in a way that falls short of God, but then we need God to get us out of it.
Mm-hmm. So, George, what happens when life circumstances produce in us this need to get distracted with drugs and chemicals and alcohol? When, how do we process? What are our life expectations? You know, we think that life is supposed to be kind of fun and good, but it's not. So I've got to change the way I feel. It's pretty normal reaction.
Yeah, well, it works for a while. You know, the Bible says that sin is fun for a season. I love drinking. You got to be kidding me. Cocktailing, little blackjacks, mm-hmm. some cocaine, cigarettes. You know, we're on a roll. And for a while it does work, but they're false gods. They're counterfeit gods, and it's a disordered worship. We're worshiping ourselves and trying to feed ourselves, where God has a plan for us that might seem, I can do better than that. And we go our own way. You know, one of your favorite verses in Proverbs is, a man goes his own way, and then he's angry at God for the results.
Yeah, a man ruins his own life and then is angry at God. Doesn't take much. You know, people blame it on the devil, but you don't even need to go there. You just blame it on yourself. On the bad choices you make.
Yeah,
devil
absolutely.
Will take credit if you give it to him, but he might go, I didn't have much to do with that. That was all you, pal.
Yeah. You know, I want to take credit for all the good things and blame God for all the bad things. There's no victims in recovery. I mean, a lot of bad things happen to people. And at a certain point, you got to go, okay, this was wrong. I know that's a harsh statement, but I need to decide, okay, this was really bad what was done to me, or what I did was really bad. But I can stay in that, or I can go, okay, this is a real hard thing for me to do, but I'm going to reach out to God and have him help me change.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some bad things, and life is bad, and it's not fair, and it's very evil at times. And there are victims, but if you're going to get into recovery, you got to go to God and help him change you.
Mm-hmm. And we are on our way to another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll bring our guest Kelly on in just a minute. Thanks for being with us.
Helping you connect faith to life every day. This is the Faith Radio Stream.
Welcome back after the show. So glad you joined us tonight on Real Recovery. Bill Arnold on this side of the room, and just across the way, George Fraser, a self-made man. You probably should have hired a contractor.
Yeah, if I could do it over again, I'd do it a lot different. I'm with you on that.
Oh, yeah, I figured you'd agree with me on that.
Can't argue it.
No. So we've got a great in-studio guest. Kelly's with us tonight, and we're going to hear quite a story. Kelly, welcome to the show.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm good.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening.
He works late.
He's been up all night.
So, you know, it's funny when you work the night shift that, you know, you wake up in the middle of the afternoon and you think it's morning, right?
I like that.
I like it, too. So anyway, Kelly, welcome to the program. And, you know, on Real Recovery, we always love the power of the personal story and where God has taken you on your journey. And it's always good to find out where that journey began. Tell us.
Well, how y'all doing, first of all?
We're wonderful.
Good. The journey that I had was very exhilarating. It was very moving. It was very heartfelt. I can remember starting back when I had to, when I was taken from my mom and dad, from my stepfather and my mom, because of the drug use.
That they had.
We were separated because of my parents.
Were you removed by the courts?
Yeah, we was removed from the courts.
Because your parents were drug users?
Yes. Wow. Yes. So two of my brothers went to my stepfather's auntie house to live. I went to a group home. And there, the group home is like gladiator school. You know,
how old are you?
I was like 12.
Okay.
Yeah. And
ouch.
Yeah. That's what I said when I got hit in the face the first time. Being in the group home taught me a lot. You know, I was around a lot of different types of guys and different types of attributes of how they live their life and things of that nature. My grandmother was a good faith. She kept in the church. She kept us all in the church and everything. I can remember us going to church every Sunday, every Bible class and things of that nature. It was a tight-knit family at the time. Once I got taken from my mom and my brothers, we all got separated, something clicked in my head. Like, I'm on my own now. So as that went on, living with my grandmother wasn't disciplined enough for me. I had started looking in the streets. And my cousins and my uncles, and they was all in the streets and living. I was so curious about it. Like, what is so good about the streets? What's going on out there? You know, I want to know. So I got so curious that I stepped, put my foot out there and start hanging out in the streets with my friends and my relatives. And that was into things that I didn't understand at the time. As I was growing into the life of stealing cars, smoking weed, it just started making me feel some type of way, like this feels good. But all along, I knew it was bad because of people telling me what you're doing is going to send you to prison or death.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't listen, hard head.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to live my own life and do what I wanted to do. You know, that comes with the territory of being in the streets. I can remember stealing my first car. When I stole my first car, I drove my car over to my neighborhood, to where everybody lives at. And when I got there, my uncle said, boy, what you doing in that car? I said, I'm trying to be like the clique. I want to be like y'all. I want to hang out and, you know what I'm saying, show you that I can be one of y'all.
Mm-hmm.
He said, boy, don't you know you ain't been down the street yet? Now, we stayed in the close-knit neighborhood. He said, you ain't been down the street yet to your grandma's house yet? I said, no, what's going on? He said, your grandma passed. So that hit me so hard that I didn't know what to do. I just took off, flying in the neighborhood, up and down the street, in a car.
A stolen car.
Okay. A stolen car that I drove over there in the neighborhood.
How old are you right now?
Right now?
No, not right now. At this time.
Right at this time, I'm 46.
No.
You were 12 years old.
You were 20, okay.
Yeah, 12.
I have a hard time understanding. You just got to roll with
it.
At the age you had stolen the car, how old were you?
I was 12 years old.
You stole a car at age 12?
12, Yes. It's the first time.
You're going to ask him how you get insurance on a stolen car?
No. Well, I just, when you come to renew the tabs, it's always kind of tricky. Yeah.
They always ask me for my insurance card.
Exactly, exactly. Which is such an inconvenience.
Yes. Tough to get your license at 12, too, isn't it?
Right, it is.
So you're trying to be the guy. You're trying to fit in, right?
Yeah. And luckily, I got pulled over by a guy that was a police officer that was so heartfelt of changing the neighborhood and helping the kids in the neighborhood. He pulled me over. He didn't take me to jail. He talked to me for about an hour. Took me to my uncle's house after we talked about my grandmother passing and everything. He understood. He took me up under my wing, and to this day, he's still in my life.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, he's my godfather. I call him my godfather. Mm-hmm. So he took me under my wing. He kept preaching to me and telling me how you are something different. You don't have to do this. And me being the knucklehead and the hardhead that I was back then, didn't listen. But he never gave up on me at all through the trials and tribulations of me still being in the streets, smoking weed, hanging with the wrong crowd. He was always there for me no matter what. He said, one day you are going to get it together, and I'm not going to leave you like some people do. But I still wasn't listening. It went in one ear and out the other. So he never gave up on me, and I continued to do what I did, start selling drugs in schools as the time went on. Eventually, we end up getting back together with my brothers. I had to move into the house where my brothers were with their father's auntie. I ended up having to raise them. I had to bathe them. I had to discipline them. Now, that part, me disciplining them, was the hardest thing ever when you was told to take your brother downstairs and spank him. And I mean spank him so he can know that is wrong what he did. And I'm saying to myself, you giving me the power to spank my brothers? And as I was spanking them, I cried every time because I was doing the exact same thing to them. They was like 6 and 5. At a young age, me disciplining my brothers like that, just, I didn't understand what was going on. I'm not the parent. I'm not the one who had these children. They my brothers. I supposed to look out for them, not put hands on them. So after a while of that, being embarrassed by putting your bed out front because you peed in the bed, putting it out in front of the house to get publicized. Look at him. He peed in the bed. Look at his mattress, his underwear, sitting outside on the front yard for everybody to walk by or drive by to see. So it was just hurtful. It was just hurtful. So I had got enough. I ran away. I ran away and started doing things my way, really harder, getting into more dangerous things, because I just figured if I'm gonna fend for myself, I'm gonna do it right. So I end up getting into deeper things, selling drugs, selling crack cocaine, selling heroin. In Detroit, Michigan. That's where I'm originally from, Detroit, Michigan. And as I got into that, I started getting money. I started thinking I'm the man. I started thinking everything's, whatever I say goes. I started taking on a hat of I'm King Willie. You know, that got me in trouble. I ended up going to prison for drug trafficking. I did 18 months. That was my first big bid, 18 months in Ohio, Dayton, Ohio. I did 18 months in there, and that prison system there, when I got in there, I just felt scared. I'm in another city. I was afraid. My family is way in Detroit, Michigan. I'm in Ohio. Don't know nobody. First couple of days I was in Ohio selling drugs, I ended up getting put in jail. So those situations were just cold and lonely and afraid and dealing with people that I don't know, being bullied. I was smaller. I was like 130. Every day I go down to the weight pile and work out hard every day and try and build my strength up, you know. But all along, you know, it just was a hurtful situation, period, just being so far away from my family, no support. So that's when I really thought I'm not the man anymore.
Interesting. Where's the voice of God in your head right now, Kelly?
Back then?
Yeah, back then.
I wasn't listening to him at all. I didn't have any kind of inclination of who he was or what he was about.
Even though grandma got you to church and you were there.
Grandma got me to church at a young age. At an age where it's that not understanding what's going on. All I see is people just clapping and hollering and screaming at the time. You know, doing a lot of tongue action, like falling out and stuff. It was just crazy to me. So I didn't really grasp it at the time. So God wasn't in my life at all when I was in the streets.
If you want to rule it out, those were some good reasons.
Yeah.
People clapping in and yelling out and falling down. I'm in the parking lot, too. I get that.
George, I have an observation here, and I'd like you to weigh in on this. It seems that if a young boy does not have his father to take him through the rites of passage into adulthood, if the dad is not present to do that, the young boy will find someone that will do it for them. And I have a feeling that that person is then going to be someone that does not have their best interest at heart.
I would expand that a little bit, young boy and young girl. Daddy is a big deal.
Yeah.
And we're going to either get it from the source. It's very interesting to me that you'd bring that up, because what I was thinking is we're either going to get our stuff from God or the world. And there's our Father who art in heaven, our Father who is on earth. If we don't get it from Father on earth and Father in heaven, there's going to be a hole there. And we hear that over and over again. What I'm hearing in the story, and it's very interesting, what we talked about at the beginning of the show and see how this plays out, is you can make a good case. This guy's an extreme victim here.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
And he is. And we can talk about people getting sexually abused and things. They have no peace in. He has no peace here. He's a kid.
Right.
But at a certain point, we're going to have to decide, okay, this wasn't fair, but God, you got to help me change it. And that's why we talk about no victims and recovery.
Mm-hmm.
You sure can be in life. And it's very sad. You know, it's real nice to see you don't weigh 150 anymore. I'm going to say, what, 180, Bill?
Yeah, probably 190.
No.
Great story and a great start here. I can't wait to hear the rest of it.
Yeah, Georgia, is there ever any good news that comes out when you start with, so my cousins and I, you know, when he's hitting the street and hanging out with relatives and people from the hood, I'm guessing that it's not going to end well.
No. But you're right. You're going to find family and community. What you don't get from your father and what we don't get from God, we're going to go elsewhere. And there's counterfeit gods and counterfeit fathers.
Mm-hmm. We're going to continue our conversation with Kelly tonight on Real Recovery. We are going to take a break. I am so glad you're listening. And thanks for being with us tonight. We'll be back just a minute.
You're listening to the Faith Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to Real Recovery tonight. Glad you're with us, Bill, George. Tonight we've got Kelly in studio. What a story we're hearing so far, George.
Very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, very young, 12 years old, steals a car, kind of pointed towards a life of crime. Meets a mentor who says, I'm not letting you out of my grip. But when you're a knucklehead, according to him, his description of himself, you don't listen to that advice.
Sounds like a hooligan here.
Sounds like a real hooligan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the word hooligan.
He's just trying to fit in.
Yes.
He's trying to get some community, family. I mean, he becomes an adult. He has to discipline, you know, the other kids. And he goes, I'm not doing this. I'm out of here. Winds up in prison. But, you know, I'm going to say, hey, why? Who wouldn't?
I agree.
You know, so it gets back to that again, you know. Of course you did that. it's going to get more interesting.
It does. And it feels good to obviously feels good to have some money and a little bit of power and a little bit of influence. And for a season, Kelly, that feels good, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. At the time, it felt great.
But it landed you behind bars, too.
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
Yeah, it landed me behind bars. And, you know, it taught me a lesson that the first time I went to prison, it taught me some things that I didn't have to do it. I didn't have to be one of those guys. This is my thought when I end up in prison. It was just like a thought that came and went. Because after I got out, I went right back to it. Because it was like I survived this situation, and it wasn't too hard on me. I didn't die. I didn't get stabbed. I didn't get, sexually molested in prison or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, I just went away on vacation for a little while. So when I got out of prison, I went straight back to it.
Yeah. You know? Now, was there some street networking that goes on in prison? Do you meet other people that help you in your craft?
Well, I really think when you go to prison, you just go there to get smarter. smarter criminal, in other words. I mean, they had the educational situation there where you get your GED, your education, college classes and things of that nature. But I wasn't interested in that at all at the time. Because when I got out of prison, I went straight right back to it.
Mm-hmm.
And once I went back to it, it was even bigger for me. Situation even got bigger, you know.
So what happened then?
Well, after I got out of prison the first time, I started dealing with bigger things and bigger situations, like pushing weight, in other words, pushing bigger quantity of drugs.
Okay.
Not knowing I was killing killing my people by selling them drugs and messing them up, being a part of that bad situation, but I didn't care.
It's about you, right?
It was all about me.
Yeah, there you go.
The women, the money,
you're rolling.
The cars. I'm the man.
You got the girls, you got the cars, you got the money, and being large and in charge, big man, all over it.
All over it.
Yeah.
You lose your frame of thought of everything that's supposed to be good, at the time. Everything that's positive when your family telling you, like, boy, you're going to end up in jail or you're going to end up dead. You're not listening. You're like, I'm the man. Who gonna touch me? Who wanna touch me? Everybody love me. I'm paying your bills. I'm paying their bills. How the heck they gonna not love me? That was my frame of thought at the time.
Consequences are for other people. I got game. I got another gear here.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you do, or you wouldn't get in the position that you're at. You can't stay there, Bill. Unless you don't have some God-given ability, but where it messes up is we think it's our ability, and then God allows us to see that what he gives, he can take away, and whatever it is to help us get back to him. You know, you talked about the cop that's still in your life with the first stolen car, 12. God's like that, Bill. He pursues us and pursues us and pursues us.
Mm-hmm.
So you're out, you're rolling, you're kind of king of the streets. How long were you able to do that?
For another year and a half.
Good run.
It was a good run. I ended up getting broke. The fame started dwindling slowly away.
Now, George knows a lot about that.
Yeah.
I never had it. So, I mean, what happened? You lose your source of supplies, so you get on somebody's turf. What happened?
Well, I got a big hit. Like I said, I thought I was the man and everything until somebody came around that corner and knocked me right off my pedestal.
Okay.
You're not the man no more. I'm taking your stuff and everybody else's stuff that you affiliated with. And me trying to get back after that person robbed me of my belongings and just stripped me of everything, I thought I was the man and had everything in order, but I didn't have my protection in order. Meaning I didn't have nobody to protect me from people coming to get my drugs or my money or my belongings or anything. I didn't know nothing about it. So I got quickly educated when they came and just took it away from me. Neighborhood guys that was selling doing the exact same thing to me as I was.
Okay.
But they was more advanced into it. They knew the life. I was just starting, and when I started, it just blew up, and it quickly deflated.
What'd you do then?
I went to start robbing people.
Kind of a career switch for you.
Yeah,
you went from sales to what would you call it?
From sales to
negative customer service.
Who needs customers when you have three stops?
Yeah.
So how was that? Do you get kind of addicted to that too? That's got to be exciting with all the stuff that could happen.
Yeah, it was cool. It was something to learn from. I didn't die from it. Like when I went to prison the first time, I had that same mind frame. Okay, you took my stuff. I'm broke. I'm busted. You didn't kill me or hurt me per se physically. Okay, I learned. I made it through this situation. Let me try something different. And I proceeded to, me and my cousin, we went out robbing people.
My cousin. There we go again, George.
Yeah, I have
that guy is such a bad influence on you.
Yeah, that's just one cousin out of many.
So you're talking robbery as opposed to burglary.
No burglary. I didn't do any burglaries. I just, you know.
Would you just go up to people? And?
Yes. The first time I robbed somebody was at a Kentucky Fried Chicken with a rifle that was broke, no bullets at all, and some handcuffs. Caught the guy in the parking lot coming out of the Kentucky Fried Chicken. He was getting into a truck that had big rims on it, loud music or whatever. And we were just out praying on people. And I caught him, made him lay down on the ground, got his money, took his truck and everything, sold all his stuff out of his truck, kept the money, and lived the life for a weekend or two after selling all his property. I end up getting police, end up finding out who I was, who we were, and my cousin ended up rolling on me, and I end up getting another 2.5 years for armed robbery. But the guy who I robbed said that I didn't have a gun because it was so dark or whatever. He was just scared to death because he was approached by two guys. So... end up going back to prison.
Wow.
And doing another 2.5 years.
Where's the voice of God in your head right now, Kelly?
The voice of God in my head right now is that he tells me all the time that you are something great.
But what about back then?
Back then?
Yeah, back then.
I wasn't listening to him at all. I didn't have any kind of inclination of who he was or what he was about. I didn't really grasp it at the time. So God wasn't in my life at all. When I was in the streets,
This is interesting how quickly this is progressing to where it's a lifestyle, Bill. I go break the law. I got to run for a while. I get thrown back in. Are you looking at that prison time is kind of the cost of doing business for what you're doing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Not a big deal. You can do the time.
Right. As I did the first time. I feel, okay, I'm going to prison again. I can do this again. You know, I went in prison and I just couldn't do it the second time. I got many fights. I got many in trouble with the COs in prison, trying to, just lie and be on times of mischief and stuff like that.
You have kind of an attitude problem?
Yeah, I had a big attitude problem and everything. That's one big attitude problem. So.
Okay.
Yeah,
I was guessing, not that I see it. I just always guess.
Speculating, aren't you, George?
Well, what you got, you think everybody else has, right?
Right.
Yeah, right.
Right.
So you're in for two?
2.5 years.
You get out?
I get out.
You make some big changes when you got out?
I made some big changes. I end up getting a job, working at Oil Express, oil change place where you get your car changed. I end up becoming the manager there.
Okay.
And I end up hiring a lot of my friends in the neighborhood to work for me because, I felt that I could become a man again within the legal acts.
Like this.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I start working and stuff like that, and I was feeling good for about 2 years. The company went under. I went and got another job. I tried to hang on to it, but money got tight. Money got tight, so I reverted back to my old ways. Ooh. To pay bills, to feed my son. At the time, my first son, you know, he just got married not too long ago. Just wanted to say that. That was a beautiful situation. God was beautiful in that situation, to touching his heart with that. I ended up having my son, and I ended up going back to my, reverting back to selling drugs just to pay the bills and put food on the table. So it was just a roller coaster ride. I tried to do legal things for a while, and I ended up coming back to what I know best.
How'd that work?
It didn't work at all.
How long did it work? Not at all.
It worked for like 6 months.
Okay, so the time period's getting shorter
yeah.
now.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm.
So how much time did we do next?
We did 2 years.
2 years.
Yeah,
so you
still
go from,
stayed in 2 years range.
You go from being in the oil business, Bill, to doing 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what you'd tell the girls, wouldn't it? I'm in the oil business.
Oil business. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
I'm back, the man.
Back in. But this is a lifestyle now.
It is.
This was the guy that was taking care of the kids and his family.
Mm-hmm.
None of this did he choose that, you know, we get moved out of our house. And this is kind of what happens. And it's sad. It's real sad.
Yeah, I agree.
How old are you at this time?
At the time, I was 24.
Good.
All right. Now,
I'm going to guess that's about 22 years ago because I listened to our show.
Yeah. I'm just dying to find out how God steps in and makes this situation different. We'll take a short break. When we come back, we're going to hear the rest of Kelly's story. Thanks for being with us tonight on Real Recovery. We'll be back in a minute.
Faith Radio Stream, connecting faith to life every day.
And George, you know what that song means? We're getting to the last segment of our show.
Absolutely.
And Kelly's got quite a story.
Going by quick.
It is going by quick. And I really am anxious to hear, when you've reached a point, Kelly, where you look up to God and say, all right, make this stop. Help me to change this lifestyle. How did that go for you?
It was a process of me losing someone.
Okay.
It took for me to lose someone real close to me and really hit home, really hit like a dagger. Actually just like stabbed me right in the heart when I lost that person. Once I was doing good in Detroit and I transitioned to moving to Minnesota, I'm a licensed carpenter. I did get my license in carpentry when I was in Detroit before I moved here in Minnesota in 96. One of my cousins got killed here in Minnesota, and I transitioned from Detroit back here. And when I came, I was coming just to investigate the situation, to see what happened or whatever. But at the time, I had a gun on me. And on the way here to Minnesota from Detroit, they called me on, they stopped me on a bus on the Greyhound bus station, ended up getting caught with the gun. I ended up going to prison for 60 months. And when I got to prison, I was in Faribault.
Mm.
When I was in Faribault, my mind started going ways of good things, but it was still being twisted a little bit because of the friends that I was still hanging around.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured if I don't get away from them, I will always still be in the same situation. I ended up signing up for IFI. At the time, it was IFI program in Lionel Lakes,
mm-hmm.
and it was a Christian-based program. I transferred from Faribault to Lionel Lakes,
mm-hmm.
did the 18-month program. I was one of those that always sat in the back, didn't know too much about the Lord, but he was always in me. After the time of me sitting in the classroom, listening to the instructor telling me this, or we reading the Bible, we read the Bible from front to back 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just the stories within the Bible that kept showing me that this was you back then. this was you, the thief, the robber, the killer, the mug, all that within the stories. And I started connecting with my life and seeing the flip side of the coin, whereas that I need to be one of those soldiers in that Bible. I need to be one of those guys that spread the word and let them know that I am someone great within me, and I am, you are someone great when I look at you, period, no matter what, who you are at all.
He won't argue with you about what you just said.
Right.
We're looking at him, and we think we're great, too. But that's, you're seeing God who created another human being in his image, fair?
Right, exactly. And I start having respect for human life, respect for my life, period. Because at the time, I didn't have no respect at all for anything. This was out there.
Why would you? You know, you react to your circumstances and...
Because it wasn't working for me,
yeah.
George. It wasn't working for me at all, George. That's when I started growing up within my mind and my body and soul that what I've been doing is not working at all. So I need to know, get to know this guy, because everybody's continuing to talk about this guy. So what is so good about this guy that you're talking about? So I start just listening and channeling out everything else. So the IFI program really taught me a lot about God, the Bible, treating your neighbors right, you know, just being a productive citizen, period.
Mm-hmm.
Just giving yourself, sacrificing yourself for others in the sake of us living on this earth as good, normal, healthy people.
Mm-hmm.
So...
putting the needs of others first.
Exactly.
Not always thinking about yourself.
Not
thinking
always,
about yourself
right.
less.
I was selfish.
Which is the
selfish.
Example Jesus set when he came to,
exactly.
to serve others.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that I can be one of them persons that can be a vessel to show people that I'm a living person that can come from bad and end up doing something good.
Mm-hmm.
So I took in the classes. And I took in and I built, put it within myself and made it my life, made this my life to give my story and help others to understand if I can get on this right train to be someone great, someone productive, someone law-abiding citizen. You can, too.
Mm-hmm. George, it sounds a little bit like redemption, doesn't it?
It is redemption.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think I keep going back to his story and what we talked about at the beginning, Bill, about there are things that happen in our life where we are victims.
Right.
And we talked about, Bill, getting in recovery and there are no victims. And what we're talking about, not that you're, if you got raped or sexually abused or taken from your house, that it was your fault, but we have a God that will allow us to move from that to a relationship with him.
Right.
Where we're not a victim anymore. We're a son of the living God or a daughter of the living God.
Mm-hmm.
And as tough as it is, what he did, he read the Bible three times. There's power in the word. We're transformed by the renewing of our mind. Philippians 1:6, he who began a good work in you will be faithful to complete it. It's not a dead book. It's the living God talking to us through his word. The word of God became flesh and dwelt among us. And we can still go with that because he left us the Holy Spirit who came to guide us into all truth.
Exactly.
What a great story.
Yes, yes. And then like the Ephesians, when they talk about the armor of God.
Mm-hmm.
I took that on.
Mm-hmm.
I took all the pieces of the armor of God. And it was a hard road to continue to keep that armor on, because sometimes I reverted back to my old ways in certain situations while I was in prison.
Sure.
You know? So, for instance, you got a big room full of 250 people in the room. I was always in the back. I moved front.
Mm-hmm.
Kept moving forward.
Yeah.
I kept moving forward. Then when I get discouraged or mind-boggling about certain things that was said, I moved back.
Start drifting back. Yeah, interesting how that works, isn't it,
yeah.
George? It's the way people work.
Yeah.
They start to backpedal a little bit when
yeah.
they start to fall away from walking with the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, especially we should run to them, but we go away, don't we?
Right,
and in
right.
prison, the only place you can go is towards the back of the room.
Right. You can't go no
You're a little bit more limited.
Right. And then I took the time to, I started reading the Bible more and more. And then it said, you know, I was listening to one of my mentor, Roger Arnold. I don't know if y'all might know him. He's a great guy.
Great last name.
Yeah, yeah. I know the guy.
Yeah.
Roger Arnold is my mentor. He's one of the guys that helped me to this day.
Mm-hmm.
That's continued to help me, just let me know that you got a quest that you need to fulfill.
Mm-hmm.
And
God's got a purpose for your life.
Got a purpose. Yeah, he got a purpose for you, and you need to continue to stay on that road. And I got to explain to him, I need to unlearn my bad behavior to relearn the behavior that will work for me and the walk that I'm walking with the Lord to help others.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like me being an example to others that's coming home from prison that can look at me and be like, oh, he's working it. I'm working at the halfway house.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working with the school system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I volunteer at the school system for security and things of that mm-hmm. nature. Things are start picking up for me. And it's not just because things are picking up for me. It just makes me feel good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a selfish person. I love everyone. And the walk
you love
that
George?
I have. I love George. Really? I love all y'all.
Okay, I just ask.
I love you. All y'all. It's not one single love.
All right.
I love you, Bill. I'm commanded to. So I go with that. Roger Arnold, I believe, ran Metro Hope Services.
Yes, he did.
Played hoops at the U or two. Mm-hmm. Good guy. So is he still in your life?
Oh, yes, he did. Good. I just talked to him before I got here, on the way here.
Okay.
Yeah.
We need to get him on the show.
Yeah.
Roger.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be good.
Yeah, it's all this true Roger that we hear. Yeah. You know, it's really cool to hear this, and you're working now. Mm-hmm. Where's the halfway house you're working at?
The working Life Builders. It used to be Midwest Challenge.
Okay.
They changed the name. I worked for Gary Parker and Earl Connolly. They took me in. They, through Roger, knowing them, working together, and they loved my story. They understand where I was coming from. They figured that I would be a good piece for their puzzle to make sure these guys can see and understand that it's more than living a life of danger when you can live a life of law-abiding and being a productive citizen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, showing that Kelly Woods, he came home from prison, graduated from the IFI program, and still on the same road of recovery, still doing everything good. Everything's going well. You know, you still, it's not all the time good, but, you know, it's just things are looking up for it.
So how do you keep it going? Are you in a weekly Bible study? Are you going to church? Are you in an accountability group? How you doing?
Yeah, I'm working at the halfway house at Midwest Challenge. The guys, it's a faith-based type of situation, and counseling them, talking to them, sitting in Bible class with them.
You know,
just understand, let them tell their stories. See where they can see within them where they went wrong and what they can do to change it. Change the mind frame of always talking or reminiscing about a lifestyle that you may not never have again. So you try and just counsel the guys and just talk to them and just see where, you know, let them know that God is love them and care about them.
George, it's an amazing story. And Kelly, thank you so much for coming into the studio today and sharing it with our listeners. It seems that we can take our brokenness, and then we can take it and share it with other people who are broken. And, Kelly, you're doing a great job of that, and God bless you in that effort. Great story. George, like I say, another award-winning episode of Real Recovery.
Yeah, let's get some info on our website about Midwest Rebuilders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did I say that right? Or?
Life Rebuilder.
It used to be Midwest Challenge.
Yeah, it used to be Midwest Challenge, but it's now called
Sounds
Life
Sounds more like a rehab place for houses, but, you know, it's good. Life Rebuilders. I like that, Bill. It's not just about stopping a behavior. It's about rebuilding your life, which you can only do through Christ.
Exactly. Yes. And that wraps up another award-winning episode. Thanks for listening tonight. So glad you were with us. Good night, and God bless. We'll see you next week.